Right Foot with great local programming on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
On our morning show today from WRCO and WRCE, it is a fun show, a fun topic. We're going to talk baseball, local baseball, with local baseball legend Vern Geishert, who's here in the studio with us today. Good morning, Vern.
Good morning, Phil. Glad to be here.
Great to have you along. The subject came up with the passing of Willie Mays, and I got thinking about that. And in fact, I was talking to your wife, and she said, "Oh yeah, Vern pitched to Willie. Give us that scenario. Was that a spring training game?"
Yes, it was. I was with the Angels, and we were playing in Phoenix. That's where the Giants have their spring training. And I was pitching in the game, and he hit a ball off me that was to the outfield fence like that. I mean, it was just and it looked like it was trying to burrow through the fence. And so he didn't hit a home run off me, but he got a double anyway.
He got pretty close.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Was that one of the hardest hits somebody hit you or not?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say, because it wasn't very high. It was high enough to get over the field, outfielders and stuff, but it wasn't very high. It just hit it was so quick that it was unbelievable.
So, any idea what year that would have been, Vern?
That would have been in, I think, about 69.
Okay.
Something like that. And I was with the big club in spring training with the Angels. And I did make the big leagues with the Angels, but I never from spring training. I'd always go back to AAA. And, but I got to start that game, got a ball autographed by Willie Mays and Willie McCovey. McCovey was a real good hitter with the Giants too. And, so that was quite an experience.
That was. So was that common to be able to get an autograph from another player during spring training?
Oh, well, Rick Reichert was on our team. He was from Wisconsin, played at the UW and stuff. And anyway, he was kind of like he thought he was pretty smart, pretty good. Anyway, he took the ball and went over to him and asked him if they'd sign. And yeah, they usually would.
Uh-huh.
If it wasn't an important game anyways, it was. But the Angels weren't really good at that time, and I got to pitch for them in spring training, like I said.
Uh-huh.
And I pitched against them in that division of the spring training was the Cubs and stuff, and the Giants and whatever. All that have spring training out in California and Arizona. And so that's how I got to pitch against them.
That's interesting. And then, you know, of course, we're Brewer fans around here, but you go back, that was a year when they were the Seattle Pilots, weren't
yes.
they?
Yes, yes. I pitched against them, too.
Did you?
Yeah. And they played, actually, I played in Seattle in 67, and that was before they were in the big leagues. And they that year with the Pilots, they played in the stadium that we played in AAA. And it was quite interesting about that because, you know, it was just like playing a home game almost that I pitched there. And I don't know if we won that game or not, but I didn't get the decision in it anyway.
Yeah, I'd heard that the Pilots stadium wasn't like maybe up to major league standards at that point.
No. Yeah. It was a AAA park.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't near as big as like the one they have out there now. And it was really a good place to play because out in the center field you could see Mount Rainier over in the distance. And, you know, it was really a kind of a cool place.
Let's go back a little bit, though. We're talking about your major league career. And, of course, you played quite a few games to get to that level. And going back to the Little League days, you grew up in Madison, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, I did. And I played Little League down there from about age 8, probably. And I played on the east side in Madison, and we played in at Tenney Park down there, right by the river down on East Warsh. Burr Jones Field, it was called. And the first few years that I played, we'd won the championship and won that league. But then there was other leagues, obviously, in Madison, and we would play off to go to the city tournament, which would be against the West Side team, and we never did it. We never made it quite that far. We got second place and so forth. And so then when I was a sophomore in high school, I think I was, in 61, the guys from Madison on that team would come and get me, and I'd go back and pitch down there. And we won the city championship then, finally. And that was 1961.
So they come and get you all the way to Richland Center and take you down to Madison.
Yeah. I didn't have a driver's license then.
Sure.
And some of the other guys on the team did have a driver's license, so they could come and get me. But that was a lot of fun, too, because they were the same guys we played, started out with in the Little League. And actually, when I go on farther, when I was in high school, my senior year, I got to pitch against Madison East. And they were the guys I played with in Little League were on that Madison East team. And we won 1-0. I pitched a no-hitter and struck out 14 guys. And that was about my biggest thrill of high school, was pitching against those guys.
The guys you'd grown up with.
Yeah, then,
so.
Yeah.
So that's was that in 63 then when you were pitching for the Hornets here in Richland Center?
No, it was in 64 when I graduated.
Okay, that year.
Yeah. Uh-huh. In 63... we had a really good team, an overall good team, and we won the conference championship, and then we won the districts and all that, and it was actually kind of funny. At that time, there was only one division. There wasn't classes or anything, and we played some teams that were kind of, they were... Like Blue River had a team, Muscadet, and we played them, and we got to the final against Gale Ettrick, and I pitched again in the finals, and I pitched a no-hitter against them to go to state. So that was a kind of good experience, too, that I got to pitch that game.
Yeah, all-size schools on the way, too, as you mentioned. Because I think DeSoto was in there, too, weren't they?
DeSoto's was in, they were in the... kind of like the sectionals, them and Gale Ettrick. And, and so it was a, anyway, it wasn't like playing Muscadet or
Blue River.
Nowadays. We wouldn't have been able to play those.
Right.
But because now when we went to state a couple years ago for Richland Center, we went to the sectionals and we played Portage.
Oh yeah.
The first game and the second game, second year, we played Wisconsin Dells. So they were a little higher than we would be, and but we got beat both games, unfortunately.
Too bad. The 1963 team was the team that that went to state. Then,
yes.
In other words,
yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have good recollections of some of the people on the team and some of the?
Oh yeah, we had a Monty Slapak. That's my wife's cousin, was on the team. He's a really good outfielder and catcher. And Tom Beatty caught, and Bunny Fowler, Gary Patch. And there was a bunch of seniors, Lance Myers, and that's what made the team good, I think, is that just experience of those guys kind of helped the rest of us. And we did go to state, like I said, beat Gale Ettrick, and then we went to state and played Madison Central, and they beat us 2-0 in the first game of the state tournament, and then they went on to the finals but got beat by Kenosha. So there again, those guys on the Central team, some of those I played against when I was playing Little League in Madison. So it wasn't all just strange guys or something. But that's the fun of playing, though. The playing in different teams is playing against different fellows and see how good you are.
Sure. So how often did you pitch? Because now we have a pitch count.
Yeah.
But you pitched about every game, didn't you?
Pretty much, yeah. Well, when I was a junior, that 63 team, Lance Myers was on our team. He was a senior, and he pitched some. He was a main pitcher before I was, and so he pitched quite a bit, too. And when I was a senior, or that junior team, we were 17-1, and we got beat the one game by Portage and won the rest of them. And we had a pretty good team. They were, and then the next year when I was a senior, we lost those six or seven seniors we had from the year before, and we weren't quite as potent on offense, so we didn't make it to state, but we made it to the regional finals, and this little left-hander from, I think, Soldiers Grove or somewhere beat us, and it was just like this Central team, they had a left-hander that threw funny stuff, curveballs and stuff like that, and we couldn't hit him, and we couldn't hit that guy from Soldiers Grove. They beat us 1-0 in like 10 innings or something like that.
Close game.
And so we didn't have a pitch count.
No.
But there was a few games that I pitched 10 innings, but most of the time it was the regulation time. And even in pro ball, he didn't have a pitch count because I pitched 10 innings in a few games my first year of pro ball, too. So now they're a little more caring about the pitchers or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, too. You know, now a quality start in the majors is like 5 innings.
Yeah.
You know, and boy, it never used to be. You used to get at least to the 8th inning.
Yeah.
You know, it was
if you had an earned run average over 2, they would kind of look at you funny in the big leagues. You know, you weren't quite ready to go. And but nowadays, they got guys with 4 and 5 ERAs, and it's funny how they keep on with those guys, because there's so many good players now that they have to choose from, that it's just odd that they would keep with some guy, unless they paid him a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they wouldn't keep him, probably.
Yeah, there's more teams and more players needed, so sometimes I think people maybe hang around the bigs longer than they would have years ago, too, for that reason.
Yeah.
So, and you played for UW-Madison back when they had baseball.
Yes, I got a full ride out of the Richland Center, but I didn't play any varsity. Freshmen couldn't play varsity ball. And after the first year, I decided to try for the draft, and that was the second year of the draft in 66, and I was drafted in the second round by the Angels in the winter draft, and so then I signed a contract. It wasn't very much, but I signed.
You always hear those horror stories about the minor leagues and what they pay. Do you recall what your weekly salary was back then?
When I was in A-ball, it was $500 a month, and but you got, you know, on road trips and stuff, you got meal money and stuff, and you just had to pay for your apartment in whatever town you're in. And then, but the higher you went, close to the big leagues, then you'd get more money.
I see.
Yeah.
When you were pitching minor league ball, I know you set an ERA record in one of the...
Yeah, in the first year I pitched in Quad Cities, and I was 12-3. And had a 1.13 ERA, which still stands as the record in that league.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Had 6 shutouts, a no-hitter. I thought I was on the way to the big leagues right then.
On top of the world.
Yeah. And so I pitched, I was 12-3, and then I went to El Paso that same year. It was 5-3. And then the same year, I went to Seattle, and I was 1-0 there. So I was 18-6 my first year, and I thought, boy, that's pretty good stuff. But actually, the higher you go and you pitch more, like in Double A or Triple A, the better hitters, you know, that come around and get you eventually, like Willie Mays.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. You see some of those guys on the way up and maybe some on the way down, too, that had played in the big leagues as well. We're trying to get back in there, rehabbing and things like that. So, sure. So you played the first year of single A, then did you go to double A then the next year in the Burroughs? Or?
No, the next year I went to triple A. Because they thought I'd be a relief pitcher.
Oh.
The Angels did. So I pitched in relief that year, and then I was kind of so-so as a relief pitcher. Yeah, I have a different mentality to be a relief pitcher. And as far as, you know, being able to pitch every day or every other day or something like that. So the next year I went back to El Paso and double A. And I pitched there the whole year. I was starting. And we won the championship in that league, the Texas League, that year. And the next year, I didn't have a real good record that year. I was 10-15. And so the next year I went to spring training. I was, you know, I was kind of had a down year. So they sent me back to double A, El Paso. And after a month or so, they called me up to triple A at Hawaii. And we played there for the rest of the season. And I pitched real well. And I went to the big leagues that year. Surprisingly, from the year before to the big leagues, I didn't realize it so much, but it was quite a jump, you know, so double A pitcher to a big league pitcher. So I went and I pitched pretty well in the big leagues.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Yeah, every level, you know, the hitters got better. You probably couldn't take anybody off. You know, maybe some leagues, the 8 and 9 hitters, you might be able to ease up a little bit, but probably not when you got to Triple A, could you?
No, because I pitched against the Washington Senators in the big leagues, and they had a guy named Frank Howard who was a big hitter. And I was really careful with him, struck him out a couple times, but the guy after him hit 2 home runs off me. Because I was really concentrating on the one, and I just kind of let the other one slide, and I paid for it.
Oh, yes. Hondo, Frank Howard, he was, I think he spent some time with Milwaukee, didn't he, as a coach or manager there for a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, at the end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, he was their big hitter.
As far as managers and coaches, did you have some ex-big leaguers as your managers, Vern, through those years?
Not really. Most of them I had were just experienced guys.
I see.
You know, they'd been around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Harry Dunlap and A-Ball. He was never in the big leagues, I don't think. And, Chuck Tanner, I had him a couple years. He's the one I'd lead it to getting to the big leagues because he managed Hawaii, and I pitched real well over there. And that's when he recommended that I go to the bigs. And so, and he was a pretty good ball player. But then their big league manager was Lefty Phillips. I don't think he ever played in the big leagues either. But it was more experience, I think. You know, if they showed something even in the minor leagues, they didn't play well, but they knew the game and this and that, then they would be able to go to the big leagues then.
Some of those old grizzled veterans, though, that manage you, you know, they've been around baseball. I'm guessing you could learn a lot from those guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We had let's see, what was his name? Anyway, we had our pitching coach with the Angels was Bob Lemon.
Oh, yeah.
And he pitched with Cleveland when they almost won the whole thing. And What was that guy's name? I can't think of his name now, but he was a funny guy. Had chew in his mouth all the time, you know.
Yeah.
But he knew his stuff.
Kind of how you picture that old baseball coach or manager kind of thing. Did you run across some ex-Braves too, like Warren Spahn and, you know, Lou Burdette and some of those guys?
Well, Lou Burdette, he played in AAA with the Angels, and I was with the Angels at that time in Seattle. And but not Warren Spahn. He was a manager of Tulsa, I think it was. And that's when Burdette was up playing with us. So they'd get together before the games and stuff and just shoot the anyway, they just talk. And that was really funny. They would be laughing and joking around and stuff. And then, actually, when I was out of high school, I played down in Milwaukee. They had a thing where the top players out of Madison area would go to Milwaukee and play the top players out of Milwaukee area. And I played at County Stadium at that time, that one game. And I got most valuable player down there, actually.
Did you really? Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, I was supposed to start the game, but the guy, our manager, Bill Fitch, I think his name was, he changed the lineup, and I pitched relief then at the end of the game. And I struck out six guys in a couple of innings and stuff. And, yeah, I got pictures in here.
Yeah, you got it.
In my
nice scrapbook there.
In my life history.
Wow, that's quite a history, I'll tell you what.
But anyway, yeah.
That's when the Braves were still in Milwaukee at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they played the game after we played.
Sure.
And I didn't actually meet Warren Spahn, but I did Lou Burdette. Mm-hmm. And
I remember hearing Bob Uecker talk about those two guys at one time, and he was saying that Warren and Lou Burdette, you know, they'd never pick up a ball in the winter. You know, they'd throw it the same way the last pitch of the season as they would the first pitch of spring training. Mm-hmm. You know, and pitchers don't approach it that way anymore.
No.
They do a lot of off-season work. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why we have more injuries. I don't know. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I think that it could be a lot of rotator cuff stuff. And that's from, I never had a problem with my arm, I don't think. Anyway, I know I didn't. My back was, if my back didn't hurt after I pitched, I know I didn't follow through. And but we did a lot of running and stuff. We did a lot of work out during the season and in spring training. But at that time, they didn't do much in the off season.
So for you, it was all about the proper follow through and everything like that kind of saved your arm then a little
bit,
it sounds like.
Yeah. I wasn't thinking of that. I was just thinking of being able to throw strikes.
Sure.
You know, I mean, you follow through, you're going to throw strikes more likely. So I really wanted to do that, and but you're not thinking about your motion when you're pitching either. But you just get in the habit of doing it a certain way, and then you can be successful or not.
Was there a player growing up that you idolized, Vern?
Well, back in those days, I liked the Yankees real well, and guys like Whitey Ford and Mickey Mantle, and those guys, I kind of liked them. And then later on, I liked the Cubs because I didn't like Milwaukee after they left. I didn't like the Atlanta Braves then because I thought they kind of messed over the Milwaukee.
Right.
So I kind of lost liking the Braves, but
I couldn't understand that because I was a little younger and I grew up immediately. I was a Brewer fan, and people would say, "Well, I'm a Cub fan or I'm a Cardinal fan." Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, "How can you? You live in this state." But I didn't understand that. You know, the Braves had kind of left them high and dry there.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But then now I'm more of a Brewers fan. But at that time, I wasn't.
Sure. And the Brewers are doing pretty well. What do you think of this year's team?
Yeah, they are. They have pretty good pitching and clutch hitting and stuff, so they might play well, or at the end of the season anyway.
Yeah.
They have to go through August, though, and they seem to have some trouble with that once
the dog days of August,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, we have lots to discuss with Vern Geischer. It's fun talking baseball from a local standpoint and the Major League scene as well. We'll have more coming up here on The Morning Show in just a moment. Richland Center baseball legend Vern Geischer, our guest here on The Morning Show today. Fun to talk a little bit of baseball. Vern, we talked a little about the 63 team, but Mr. Ted Wheelock, boy, he was quite a coach here in Richland Center for a lot of years.
He was. He was my coach from when I was a freshman. And he really, I don't know how I can say it, he treated the guys like they were individuals. You know, I mean, he wouldn't have one thing for everybody. If a guy was maybe making mistakes in one area, he could talk to them. And if another area, he could talk to them. And he was a really good coach. I enjoyed playing for him.
You played some Legion baseball as well, didn't you?
Yes. In fact, the 63 year when I went to state in high school, we had a real good Legion team. And I pitched 31 and two-thirds innings, no-hit ball consecutive.
Wow.
And I pitched against Middleton, Sauk, Baraboo, and then Beloit. We played Beloit here, and it was kind of like a lead-up game to the state tournament in Legion ball. And I had 8 2/3 of no-hit, and then a guy hit a dinger off me, a rocket to center field. We used to have Richmond Center had a home plate back by the restrooms there at Cross Cup.
Yeah.
And that fence that runs along 14, that chain-link fence towards the river, so it ended up down by the end of the chain link fence.
He got it all.
It was a rocket. It was almost like Willie Mays. And so anyway, that put us tied us at 1-1. And then this Jerry Kenny hit a Texas leaguer behind second base, and the outfielders ran together, and he kept running. And he got around the third, and they threw it over his head, and he scored. And so they beat us 2-1. And so that was quite a game, too. But that's what I remember most about pitching is the home runs guys hit off.
I was going to say, was that one of the furthest ones that somebody hit off here?
Oh, yeah, I would say it was a line drive, but it went real far.
Yeah.
And but there was some in pro ball that guys really hit one too. But I don't know. It seems that I remember my mistakes more than I remember striking out somebody.
That's human nature. I think you have a list of the major league players you struck out. Could you share that with us, Vern?
Yeah, the fellow up in Elroy sent me this, and I struck out 18 guys, and I think it was 30 innings I pitched in the big leagues. And I pitched, the first game I pitched against Cleveland, and we won. I got the win in that game. And they had a guy named Duke Sims and Jose Cardinal, and I shut those two guys out. And then we went to Washington, and they had Frank Howard, and they had Ken McMullen and some players like that. And I was really worried about Frank Howard. He's a big guy, I think 6'8" or something like that. Hit a lot of home runs. So I struck him out twice, but the guy that hit behind him, he hit a couple of dingers off me. And I didn't get the loss in that game, but I gave up a lot of runs. And then I pitched against Minnesota, and Tony Oliva struck out a couple times. And pitched against Oakland, and I struck out Reggie Jackson once.
No.
Yeah.
He struck out or hit a home run usually. Yeah. Yeah.
And so it was quite an experience. I got to pitch, 11 games in the big leagues, and I pitched against quite a few guys that were pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily Hall of Famers, but they were pretty good hitters at the time.
Oh, I recognize a lot of those names. And yeah. Reggie's a Hall of Famer, and yeah. Yep. I think Frank Howard too. I think he's.
I don't know if he is.
I think he is.
Yeah.
Well, I have to look that one up.
Yeah.
Talk about the time that you pitched in Minnesota, though. You had a caravan from Richland Center that went up and watched you pitch in the big leagues, didn't they?
Yes, it was a group that came up on a bus. And my dad was with them, and my sister, and my wife's aunt and uncle. And anyway, I talked to him before the game. I got a picture of actually talking to him in here in my catalog. And Andy Messersmith started the game, and I came in with the bases loaded in the fifth inning or something like that. And they pinch hit a guy, a left-handed hitter. And I was warming up, throwing a ball around a little bit because nervous with the fans there and all. And the first pitch I threw kind of up and in a little bit. And he ducked away with the bat, and it hit the bat, went to third base for a double play.
All right.
I thought that was pretty easy.
Yeah.
But one guy hit a home run off me, Cesar Tovar. But other than that, I got him all out and got the save in that game.
Stay tuned for the second half of today's morning show program on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE. Coming up, though, in just a moment, we'll have a look at today's news.
Pathway Policy from Pekin Insurance. Contact Josh Clary at Clary Memorial Funeral Home for more information.
WRCO 100.9 FM, Richland Center.
A news update at 6:30 is sponsored by Computer Connections, Y-Connect Wireless, bringing high-speed internet to rural communities, and by Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy, your full-service pharmacies, caring for you and about you. Also sponsored by BL Signs. A high today of 73 with some chances of rain this morning and then showers redeveloping this afternoon. 1 to 2 inches of rain all total could happen today and tonight. A high of 73. So far, 25/100 of an inch of rain has fallen, and it is 58 degrees.
Wherever you are in southwest Wisconsin, you're always close to someone who has trusted BL Signs. The van you're meeting with a great rap, the business sign that makes you feel welcome before you even get out of the car, or the restaurant sign that makes you hungry the moment you see it. BL Signs is the trusted source for projects done well, done on time, and done on budget. The best start for any signage project is BL Signs of Richland Center. Online at blsignage.com.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I am Phil Nee, and here is what you need to know. A former Richland County employee at Pine Valley Community Village has been arrested following an investigation. The county became aware of alleged threats made against Administrator Shaponda Ann Jimerson, 38 of Middleton, and immediately referred the matter to law enforcement, which led to a parallel investigation into the allegations. In April, the Richland County Sheriff's Office launched its investigation into the stalking threats made against Jimerson, which raised serious concerns about her safety and well-being. The threats, which were sent through two fictitious Facebook accounts, seemed like a complex case of harassment. The investigation continued when Jimerson sought a harassment injunction against a resident of Richland County, claiming that she and her family were being targeted and harassed by this individual. To support her case, she presented a letter and other material items as evidence of the harassment she was experiencing. However, as the investigation unfolded, a shocking truth emerged. Jimerson herself was behind the threats, and the Richland County Sheriff's Office discovered that the letter used in the injunction was fabricated. As investigators dug deeper, the truth began to unravel. The Richland County Sheriff's Office obtained a collection of online activity records, which revealed that Jimerson had created the fictitious Facebook accounts herself and was sending threatening messages to herself. This was a clear case of self-victimization, where Jimerson had concocted a web of lies to deceive those that support her. On June 25th, the Richland County Sheriff's Office, in collaboration with the Middleton Police Department, executed a search warrant. Shaponda Ann Jimerson has been arrested for perjury and resisting or obstructing an officer. The county's investigation into Pine Valley led to Shaponda Ann Jimerson's termination on June 13th. For a second time, a recall effort against Speaker Robin Voss is rejected. On a 4-2 vote Thursday, the Wisconsin Elections Commission found that organizers failed to collect enough valid signatures on the recall petition. Democratic appointees Commissioner Mark Thompson and Chair Ann Jacobs voted against a motion from Republican appointee Don Millis, which found the petition to be insufficient. Although WEC staff had advised there were enough signatures to proceed, commissioners voted 4-3 in support of Millis's resolution. The decision means Voss will not face a recall unless organizers can get a court to intervene. Voss was targeted by supporters of former President Donald Trump. Thursday's Wisconsin Elections Commission meeting at the Capitol included a call for Commissioner Robert Spindell to resign. Several people made the demand. Spindell, a Republican appointee whose term expires in 2026, was one of a slate of fake Republican electors who met at the Capitol following Donald Trump's 2020 loss to President Joe Biden in Wisconsin. He's given no indication that he plans to resign. An apparent leak at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Justices will hear a lawsuit filed by Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin that asks the court to declare that access to abortion is a right protected by the Wisconsin Constitution. That's according to a draft court order obtained by Wisconsin Watch. Chief Justice Annette Kingsland Ziegler issued a statement on Wednesday and said the entire court was shocked to learn that a confidential draft document was leaked to the press. Ziegler said law enforcement has been asked to conduct an investigation. She said all seven justices were united behind the investigation to identify the source of the apparent leak. A public hearing by the State Assembly Corrections Committee could allow staff and the families of incarcerated persons to air their grievances and concerns. Committee Chair Representative Michael Schrah of Oshkosh says lawmakers need to learn more on the deaths of inmates at the Waupun prison and the unprecedented fatal attack on Lincoln Hills school counselor Corey Prolix. Schrah actually hopes to schedule a hearing for the second week of July at the Capitol in Madison. In Washington this weekend, low-income voters are hoping to get the attention of elected officials. This weekend, Joyce Frome of Oshkosh is a Wisconsin Media Committee member for Saturday's Mass Poor People and Low-Wage Workers Assembly. She said low-income voters are almost a third of the electorate, and if they voted together, they would be one of the most powerful voting blocks around. Organizers hope to mobilize the one-third of the U.S. electorate who are poor and low-wage infrequent voters. There are many things going on this weekend. The 2024 Spring Arts and Crafts Fair is one of those in Spring Green, Saturday and Sunday on Jefferson Street. The Spring Green Arts and Crafts Fair has been growing through the years. Spring Green Arts and Crafts Fair co-president Diane Barenbrook invites everyone to the fair.
The art fair will begin on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. with a trumpet fanfare by Michelle Mack. And on Saturday, the fair hours are from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. On Saturday only, we will have a children's area sponsored by the Spring Green Community Library. There will be crafts, stories. Children will be able to take a book home. They can sign up for the summer reading program. And that will run from 10 until 3 on Saturday. We'll have two entertainers from 10 until 1. Abby Spencer will be providing entertainment. And from 1:30 until 4:30, Don Greenwood will provide entertainment. And that will take place in the Post House Garden. On Sunday, the art fair runs from 9 until 4, and it begins with a trumpet fanfare by local trumpeters Julie Cousy and Nancy Maxwell. Entertainment on Sunday will be provided from 10 until 12 by Jana Johnson, and from 12:30 until 3:30 by Jamba Dextrous.
The Spring Green Arts and Crafts Fair will be this Saturday, 9 to 5, and Sunday from 9 until 4. And the church that was decimated by a tornado in Argyle last weekend is now asking for help restoring its cemetery. Apple Grove Lutheran Church now is a pile of rubble instead of a building, and insurance will help them rebuild, but the cemetery is a mess. It has about $30,000 in damage, with lots of headstones taken off their footings and some even broken into pieces. Church officials have started a GoFundMe, hoping to raise $15,000 to pay for part of the restoration. So far, they're up to almost 10,000.
It's internet for everyone from Why Connect Wireless. Why Connect Wireless provides high-speed internet to rural communities throughout southwest Wisconsin with options for unlimited internet with no contract required, so you can stream all your favorites. Catch the local broadcast with a professionally installed TV antenna. Call 524-1579 today and ask how to save with bundle packages, or visit WIWC.net for details. Why Connect Wireless?
The Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy has exceptional caring staff and great services. They are a locally owned, independent pharmacy, proudly serving the surrounding area communities. The Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy is committed to helping patients manage their medications. The pharmacists work along with patients and their healthcare providers to find an individualized plan to help each patient maximize the benefits of their medications while minimizing or preventing adverse effects, interactions, costs, and waste.
The forecast for today calls for a high of 73. Rain will taper off and then redevelop this afternoon. Possibly 1 to 2 inches of rain total for today and tonight. 66 tonight. There's a slight chance of a shower tomorrow afternoon and a high of 83. Rain continues in Richland Center following the midnight reading of 68. The rain has been steady. We're now up to 28 one-hundredths of an inch of rain today, and it is 58 degrees, our overnight low.
Stop the Sherwin-Williams July holiday sale and get 30% off paints and stains from June 28th through July 8th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Do you enjoy performing minor maintenance and routine building upkeep? Take pride in caring for a beautiful property? The House on the Rock Resort Hotel has an opening for a full-time, year-round building maintenance and upkeep position. 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year. They also have part-time openings available. Apply now by calling 608-935-3639, extension 1201, or print an application at thehouseontherock.com. Join them and help keep their resort in top shape.
Sports Time today is sponsored by Mr. G's Downtown Viroqua and in the Richland Square Shopping Center, your local source for clothes, boots, shoes, and for everything in style you need for work and play. And by the Homesteader Store, Southern Wisconsin's tractor experts. Coming up, a look at the local area scene, some baseball games that went on last night, and details on the Brewers weekend coming up. Looking for the best in shoes and clothing? Look no further than Mr. G's Shoes and Clothing in Richland Center. Mr. G's has it all. From stylish outfits to durable work boots. Whatever you need, Mr. G's has you covered. Visit them today at 140 Richland Square or give them a call at 647-3543. Mr. G's Shoes and Clothing, where quality meets style.
Shoes, Mr. G's.
The Wisconsin Baseball Coaches Association All-Star Game is headed toward Oshkosh this weekend at E.J. Schneider Field today and tomorrow. It's a round-robin tournament involving 72 high school seniors in the state of Wisconsin, divided by regions into four teams, the North and the Green Bay Fox Valley area, the East, the Milwaukee area, the South, the Madison area, the West from the La Crosse, Stevens Point, and Eau Claire areas. One local player will be involved in that on the South squad. Micah Salisbury, a recently graduated senior from Ithaca High School, will be a part of the South roster. He'll also be joined by Jamison Johnson of Pecatonica, Brock Massey of Mauston, and Keegan Hooker of Portage, a few players that we saw during our local baseball coverage this past spring. Well, the American Legion baseball season continues on. The Viroqua Legion team was a winner over GET last night, 9-7. Also, the Gaze Mills post 308-220 Grizzlies were winners 8-3 over Onalaska in the first game, while Onalaska's Bi-State Bulldogs won 11-3 in the second game. And in hometown in baseball, Reedsburg 6-2 over Wisconsin Dells, Sauk Prairie 12, Arena 1, Wyota 10-4 over Scholesburg-Benton, and Black Earth 14-5 against Middleton. The Simon Sharks were swimming last night, traveling to Prairie du Chien, facing the Water Hawks and the Dodgeville Dolphins. Veteran swimmer Leah Chambers led the Sharks by earning a first place finish in the short, free, backstroke, and long free. Swimmers who earned two first place finishes were Kaylin Burns in the short freestyle and the 100 individual medley, Brooklyn Worthington in the butterfly and breaststroke, James Waterfall in the breaststroke and backstroke, and Gabriela Ortiz in the butterfly and breaststroke. The Brewers will get back to action tonight after having the game off, the day off yesterday. They will host the Cubs in Milwaukee. First pitch time 7:10 this evening. The Cubs coming in after a win against San Francisco yesterday. That final score was 5-3. Miami defeated Philadelphia 7-4, Cincinnati 11, and St. Louis 4. It was Baltimore 11-2 over Texas in the American League, Toronto 9, the Yankees 2, Kansas City 2-1 over Cleveland. The Angels 5, Detroit nothing. The White Sox edged Atlanta 1-0, and Minnesota 13-6 over Arizona. Filled with talented young professionals, at least one pro football expert says the Packers' offense can be one of the top 10 in the NFL. Quarterback Jordan Love is already considered a good choice for MVP if he performs as he did in the final 8 games last season. NFL.com ranks Green Bay's offense number 9 for the approaching season. The 49ers of San Francisco are picked as the best. The Bucs are keeping it young. They selected 19-year-old G League star Tyler Smith in the second round of the 24 NBA draft last night. Smith is 6'11 with a wingspan of 7 feet 1 inch. He was a 5-star prospect coming out of high school and passed up a chance at college. Assistant General Manager Milt Newton of the Bucks.
There was a lot of conversation, calls from agents, calls from other teams wanting to move up into our spot, into our position. But we had our process in place and knew that if our player was there, we were definitely going to select that player, which we did.
And that is an update on sports. I'm Phil Nee.
LS Tractors are a great tractor at a great price. Hi, this is Rick from the Homesteader Store. Let an LS Tractor do all those jobs that need to get done. They make tractors from 21 to 101 horsepower. These excellent tractors have hydrostatic transmissions for ease of use. They come with loaders, 3 points, and PTOs to power any attachments. LS has great long-term financing. I would invite you to our indoor showroom at the Homesteader Store, Highway...
How thrilling was that in front of your family members and local residents? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that had to be something.
Yeah, a guy made a 8mm movie of it, and we had that put on disc, and now we can watch it on disc. It's only a short thing because it's only pitched a few innings, but it actually shows me. So I have proof that I played in the big leagues, not just writing.
Yeah.
But I have proof, and... Anyway, and then the last game I pitched in the big leagues was the last game of the year against Kansas City. And I had a no-hitter for 7 innings. And there's an article and stuff here, too, that it ended abruptly, my no-hitter. They beat me 6-2.
Oh.
So I got the loss in that game. But at least I started out well.
Yeah, you really did.
Yeah.
Wow. So then that was the last game that you played with the Angels then?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then you were traded in the offseason?
To Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, he eventually led the American League in hitting, the guy I was traded for.
Oh, not Joe Morgan. George Foster, right?
No.
It was a Red, wasn't it? Red? Okay. We'll have to look that up, too.
Yeah. I have it myself. But anyway, and I went to spring training with the big club, with Cincinnati, but I didn't make the team.
Oh, I'm said it is George Foster. It was George
no,
Foster.
No, that was when I was traded to the Giants.
Oh, okay.
When I came home then.
Oh, okay.
That was 2 years later.
2 years later.
Yeah.
Well, talk about the fact that you still get autograph requests.
Oh, yeah.
You?
It's funny. Because I get letters and stuff from people, and sometimes it's quite a few. Or what I mean, not a million of them, but I get a couple every couple of weeks, and they send cards and stuff that they want me to sign. And I think it's a real honor for me to do that, because not having really played that long, and it's been so long now since I played. It's just 50 years or something like that. And so it's kind of an honor to get those.
Yeah, that's amazing. So from all over the world then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got them to Japan and...
Wow.
And mostly the United States, though, but it was... The one from Japan was really good. See, they write a little letter along with it, and they talk about what they do, and this guy from Japan, he played Little League and stuff, and how strenuous it is over there. They make him come and work out every day. And anyway, different from here. Because here, used to see the ballparks filled in the summertime with guys playing workup and stuff. And anymore, you don't. You just organize ball now in the United States. And but anyway, it's really, like I say, an honor to get that stuff.
Are they the card? Because you had a card, I believe, when you were with the Reds, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was with, it was a rookie card. It was with Hal McRae and Wayne Simpson. And I get those, too. I don't know how they get so many of them. But, and then some are just index cards they want signed. And some actually make little cards with designs on them and stuff of the Angels. And want you to sign them. And it's pretty interesting, really.
Yeah. What an honor, Aaron.
Yeah, it is. Jeez.
For all those years in the big leagues, or, you know, a couple of years in the big leagues, but I think a lot of people were fans of the Reds, you know, when they started out getting really good in the 70s, and, mm-hmm. you know. And
I missed out on that.
Yeah, you just missed out on that,
yeah,
didn't you?
Because I was traded in 71, and their big red machines were like in the mid-70s.
I'm sure, yeah. And, but you probably knew some of those guys as they were building.
In spring training, I pitched to Bench and...
Johnny Bench.
And New Rose and mm-hmm. all those guys.
Sure.
And when I was traded to the Giants, that was for George Foster, who eventually was a home run hitter for Cincinnati. He was part of the Red Red Machine. And I missed out on that, too, like I said, mm-hmm. having been traded. So,
yeah. But you did get to play pretty much all over the country. And how cool was it to play in Hawaii? That must have been.
Oh, that was great. We actually lived there because we lived there for 4 months. And my wife lived there more than I did because the road trips would be like a week or two because they didn't want to fly guys back and forth to the mainland. So she was over there more than I was. But it was a good experience. And we played in a stadium where the Hula Bowl was played, the old one. And guys that hit home runs to right field because it was real close. But left field was 300 yard, the football length, and so they didn't hit so many to left field. But
And the atmosphere. Now they always talk about like Coors Field in Denver. You know, like that's a home run because of the you know, it's a little bit lighter air or whatever the case might be. I don't know about Hawaii. If you know what it was like pitching there, but it certainly was dry, probably.
Yeah, but like I say, the field was. What it was there, a football field, you know, was long on one side and short on the other, and right field was the short side. So that's why it was a home run park. Mm-hmm. But you could hit one into the left field, and if they missed it, it'd go forever on the ground and stuff. But anyway...
Did they have a radar gun? They didn't really have those then,
no.
Did they?
Everybody asked me how hard I threw, and I said, I don't know. They didn't have a gun then. It was before that. But I threw pretty hard.
There are guys now that, in fact, the other night, McGill for the Brewers, 101 plus, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if anybody was throwing triple digits then, but I know.
Oh, yeah, they had guys that, like Bob Gibson, and in the big leagues anyway, and they had a guy in minor leagues that threw really hard, but he couldn't throw a strike. So he never made the big leagues, but they say he threw 100 anyway.
He could throw hard, yeah. Yeah. Did you ever cross paths with Ryan Duren?
Not when I was playing. I run into him around here when he, like at the Mallards game, or mm-hmm. even in Kaz when I first came home, they had a game where he would pitch for them and I pitched for Richland Center in an exhibition game. But I never really knew him because he was about 10 years older than me.
Yeah. They say he can throw pretty hard, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Especially with his thick glasses and scare guys.
Right, right.
Throwing up on a screen now and then. Actually, I saw him pitch in the Angels ballpark. There was a all-star game, and he was warming up beforehand, and he threw him up on the screen just to give the people a thrill. But he threw hard.
Did you ever do that? Kind of throw it wild in warm-ups just to intimidate somebody?
Sometimes I did it, and I didn't mean to.
Yeah, I was going to say. Like, what movie is it? Bull Durham, where they hit the mascot, you know, and throwing it all over the place. So. But, you know, during your string of strikeouts and things like that, too, did you have a particular pitch, like a strikeout pitch that you went to?
Generally around here, I had a fastball that I could throw it by most guys. And I throw a pretty good curveball, too. But in the pro ball, they could hit the fastball. So you have to change it more. And I eventually started to throw a slider, too. That was in pro ball. And that's what made me get to the big leagues, because I had three pitches then. And the pitch that I should have had, which they have a lot now, is a changeup. Because mm-hmm. I throw hard and then have a changeup, then you really screw them up.
Mm-hmm.
But
just drop a few miles an hour, and that's all it takes then.
Yeah.
Analytics, too, are such a part of the game now. Did you pay much attention to right-handed batters, left-handed batters, and things like that when you were playing, Vern?
Well, they didn't do it on computers so much, but they did it. The guy that was going to pitch the next day, he would keep book and on what the hitters hit in right field or left field, or up or down or whatever. And so that was about the extent of it, was just the guy keeping a book.
You've got quite the scrapbook there. Anything that I didn't ask you about in terms of, you know, your playing career or things that happened, Vern?
I don't know. But I just brought these along just in case we did forget something.
Oh, sure.
But a
lot of black and white photos.
Yeah.
There's one that it really, I can share with the radio audience, but one of your welcome homes during that 63 run to state, but you got the guys in there. It looks like WRCO is doing some interviews there in the background.
Yeah. Yeah, that was Mort Batty. He was a businessman here in town.
Mm-hmm. And, Mort Batty, right. Okay. You got all the box scores and the clippings and everything.
Well, my mother did that.
Your mother did that, okay.
The stuff when I was young, anyway.
Your biggest fan.
And I put them in this book and the other book there afterwards, because it was just kind of a scrapbook thing.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah. Can you imagine what your life would have been like without baseball? Like, maybe what you would have done, Bert?
Well, I think that I just would have had a regular job around.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did afterwards, anyways.
Sure.
And I had a good jobs with Zander's Creamery and Cross Plains and United Building Center and stuff from here. I worked for them for a few years.
You kept playing, though. You kept playing baseball when you...
I played until I was in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go up north. Well, actually, when I first came home, I pitched for the Richland Center team. It was the Richland County League. And we played Cavs as our big nemesis. And that Reedsburg was in it, and Muscadet, I think. And then later, I pitched for the hometown team a little bit. And then I went and played for Madison. This Gene Barrett had a team from that was Anchor Savings and Loan. And we would go to the tournaments around NBC tournaments in Wisconsin and win that. We go to Wichita, Kansas and stuff. And then later even, I pitched for Excellent up north. It's up by Hayward. And they had a really good team. Just a little town. There was nobody in the town, hardly. But they would recruit guys from around. And we went to Canada and played and Dakotas and played tournaments and stuff. And then finally... Finally, after all that, I played in Madison in the Old Timers League and played up in Sealy, Wisconsin. That's up by Hayward, too, and played in Older Than Dirt tournament up there for a number of years.
Thanks for the memories, right. The only guy I know that pitched to Willie Mays, so it's an honor to know you, Vern, really.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. And thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Okay, thanks a lot, Phil.
You bet. Vern Geischer joining us here on WRCO Radio, our morning show today.
Tom Mueller from Mueller Implement is our guest. Tom, we don't talk a lot about it, but you do have a lot of rental opportunities at Mueller Implement.
A ton of them. We've been in the rental business for 50 years. It's interesting. We got in it by chance. We were John Deere dealers and had some stuff we couldn't sell, didn't know what to do with it, so we started renting it. From that point on, we launched a rental business that's now 50 years old. Big things that we handle are backhoes and stump grinders and trenchers, and you name it, we probably have it. If it's a really small item and we don't have it on hand, what we really do here is we make all efforts to get you to somebody that has it, because we're also a source of information. So if you call us and we can't answer your questions, we've failed you. So we really want you to understand it's all about service. The other nice thing about our rental fleet is all very, very modern. Nothing over 5 years old. We make sure that we turn it often, and we keep it going. It's also an opportunity for people to buy something that they're renting and say, hey, I really like this machine. What's it going to cost me? And we can shoot you a great price. We're always turning our equipment over. But, Phil, there's the other side of our business. Of course, we're in the lawn and garden business, and we do a very big job in that.
If I come in and package a snowblower and a lawnmower, you're going to swing me a deal?
You bet. Not only that, we're going to maybe put a pole saw in there and a bunch of other things with 20% off. It can all go on the same contract. That's the beauty part. And the other thing, too, is financing is quick and easy. Literally, you're in and out, and we can take care of you. Knowledgeable people. We have people here that really can answer all your questions. It is the most important thing to buy something and then know how to run it and understand how to take care of it. So our service department gets involved in just about every sale, and that's very important because we don't want you to have something fail on you. So if you're really looking to come see us, come to Dodgeville, Wisconsin. We're at 4948 Highway YZ right across from Midwest Roofing, and of course, those little guys, Farmer Fleet, they're still open. The lights are on this morning. Go to www.MuellerRental.com. That's our internet site. Or go to Craigslist and punch Mueller on the left-hand side. You'll see our specials right now. We're open from 7:30 to 5:30 p.m. Monday through Friday, 7:30 to noon.